Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
A plan to afford domestic abuse survivors the chance to waive their anonymity and name their abusers in family law cases has been recommended under a shake-up of the privacy rules. The in-camera rule means certain family law hearings are held in strict privacy. However, the naming of abusers is among 20 recommendations designed to make the difficult and often traumatising cases more transparent. For her reaction to what's proposed, I'm joined now by board member of Safe Ireland, Maeve McLaughlin Doyle, whose ex-husband Mark Doyle was last year sentenced to 6 years in prison after pleading guilty to abusing Maeve and her two sons over a 12-year period. Maeve, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hi, how are you?
No, not too bad. And thanks for joining us. Before we discuss the recommendations, Maeve, around the in-camera rule, I'd love to hear your views on them. Can I ask, you might remind us of your own story. Your ex-husband Mark was a former guard.
Yeah, he was a former guard, and we were living together for 12 years, married for 7. And during that time, myself and my children experienced gender-based violence and coercive control in our home. So I've been through both sides of the system, the criminal justice side and the family courts.
Yeah, so you've been through the family courts, so you know how the in-camera rule, the privacy rule works and so on. What was your experience, Maeve, of the family courts?
Well, I do think like the in-camera rule for the privacy of the family in a normal separation or divorce situation should be in place because everyone has a right to their family privacy. But unfortunately, when it's gender-based violence or a coercive control situation, the abuser or the perpetrator tends to use it to their advantage because the in-camera law unfortunately brings a lack of transparency within what's going on. So like very often these victims, which are usually women and children, are trying to reach out for supports to get through or to get away from the abuser. And if they can't be fully open about what's going on with them in the family courts, it's very hard for them to reach supports from other professionals. For an example, a school situation, like in the different schools my children went to, I would have had to explain certain things, but you're not supposed to speak about what's going on. For example, barring orders or safety orders.
Really?
So you can't show copies of that or speak about it, but you need to inform other professionals that are working with your family or your children.
So let me see if I've got this right, and forgive me if I'm wrong here and if I'm being in any way cumbersome. So you were being abused, you and your children, and that was really traumatising for you all. And this went on for 12 years, as I said, I think. So in that time, you need support, obviously, if you're brave enough to reach out for it. And
yeah,
you need to
support.
Let the schools know, but you couldn't because of the in-camera rule. Is that right?
Yeah, because I remember one of the principals of one of the schools actually asked me for a copy of the barring order because it was for myself and the children. And like I couldn't give her a copy of the barring order. So then I was in this sticky situation where my family law solicitor and barrister were saying to me, look, you can kind of talk about it in code or you can show but don't give. Like, so this kind of vague kind of like, and like, you know, principals are aware of this, the actors of the courts, like the barristers, solicitors, they're aware that it's a kind of a grey area where they can't tell you that you can show any of this or talk about this, but they know practically when you're trying to get support or children are missing school because it, you know, like, or even for, like, I'm just thinking children missing school, maybe to go to counselling or something. My children had a lot of trauma and had to go to counselling. And, you know, these things might come up in situations like that. But then you can't fully explain to these professionals that are there to support you everything that's going on within the family court. Now, sometimes you don't need to explain everything that's going on, but sometimes you do need to explain
But I'd imagine that it's hard enough to talk about this to anyone, let alone talking about it in code.
Exactly. And another thing that struck me, now I know my case was unique in the sense that Mark was a guard, but like he was, because of the in-camera law, he was able to continue working as a guard for 6 to 7 months after having a full barren order in place because he didn't have, it was, he was able to hide it for the in-camera rule.
There was no naming. There was no naming.
There was no naming.
Anonymity. I heard because, as well, Maeve, I'd love your opinion on this. Others have detailed How they felt they couldn't kind of access counselling. And you mentioned how important counselling was during some of the lowest points, because they feared prosecution for breaching privacy rules if they breached the in-camera rule while in counselling.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, you really need counselling when you're coming out of a gender-based violence situation. You need that support to get through everything. And then to not be able to discuss. And it, like, unfortunately, abusers and perpetrators use the family courts and the in-camera situation to further abuse victims. And then for the victim not to be able to speak about it to the people that are helping her or her children. And in some cases, I know there are some men as well who end up being victims. So for the person not to be able to speak to supportive people like counsellors, the refuges, anything about the legal bits that are going on for them, because, you know, we're human. And at the end of the day, sometimes these victims and stuff won't have a family member. You know, it's a touchy subject when family stuff is going on. Mm. And the one people that you should be able to speak to are professionals that you've engaged with. And if you can't do that, you're isolated further. And the biggest thing about gender-based violence is being isolated. That's what a perpetrator and abuser does. So then to be isolated by the family law system, or to have the feeling of being isolated, it's just, it's like being re-abused again, or re-victimized.
So you said once or twice, even in this interview, that they take advantage of the rules, the abuser, or that they use the rules around the family courts to further abuse. Is that really how it feels, the in-camera rule?
Yeah, like, look, not in all aspects, but in some aspects, like, there was certain things that in my experience that were spoken about or talked about within the family courts, and the in-camera rule protected the abuser. I've heard that from other women. I help out with voluntary groups, and I've heard it time and time again, where the abusers tend to hide behind the in-camera rule, because a lot of gender-based violence situations will only go to the family courts. They won't always go down the criminal route. So a lot of abusers in the past, and I know definitely there's Minister Jim O'Callaghan is really trying to, there's an ongoing reform of the family justice system. So I know people are aware of these things, mm-hmm. but I have heard it time and time again where abusers and perpetrators have kind of used the in-camera thing to, because they know there's not full transparency.
Do you think if this recommendation came to fruition, if it was granted, like in safety or protection or barring orders, if you had the right to publicly name your abuser, to waive your anonymity, do you think many would take that up?
Everybody has to make their own decision on that. But I do think if it's a case where, I think I've seen women where they're so frustrated because of in-camera stuff, like they're having to, it's nearly like a shame having to hide. It feels like you're hiding still. And like, going back to the core of gender-based violence is shame and hidden and isolation. And then you're in the courts and now you're told you're not allowed to speak about stuff that you need to talk to professionals about to be able to move forward through your journey to get away from your abuser. So I definitely think, you know, I can see women would use it, because it would mean, you know, the more you speak about it, the more you speak out, the more you're coming away from it. You know that kind of way?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I know from having read in this area, not extensively, but a little bit, in a way it feels like it's feeding into the coercive, controlling nature of an abuser. Nobody will believe you if you come forward. That's what they say sometimes, isn't it?
And that's what I said at the start of the interview. Like, in-camera should definitely be there for privacy of the family. If it's a normal divorce separation situation, you should be able to have privacy over your own family and the problems or whatever went on. But unfortunately, in a gender-based violence situation or coercion, it just feeds in to what abusers' main thing is, which is to hide things and, you know, isolate. And unfortunately, so it's not like, it's not there for that reason, but unfortunately that is how it's used sometimes within
true
courts.
Misused, maybe.
It's misused,
yeah. A texter says to 51551, know what you think of this, Maeve. As a man and a victim of domestic violence, I would not be in favour of lifting the in-camera rule. It would only feed oxygen to those who like to speculate in rumours and more damaging to our children. What do you make of that?
Well, I think everybody's going to have their own opinion on it, but I do think that, you know, the in-camera rule protects privacy, but unfortunately the downside of that is that it leads to a lack of transparency. And I think the only way a victim can trust the system is if it's transparent. and the system, you know, needs to have, you have to have a system that people can trust. So I think transparency is needed. Now, obviously, if this came into effect, I'm sure it would be robust enough that this person would have to be a proven abuser or, like, it's, you know, the courts are serious business. They're not going to willy-nilly let people name people.
Yeah.
Because, and judges know who they're looking at. They're looking at people every day of the week. District court, circuit court judges are intelligent people who are looking at, and barristers who work there and stuff, they know who they're looking at. You know, this is, I don't think if this came in, it would be willy-nilly, like people are just able to name people.
No, no, you're right. I think there would be safeguards, know, and it's reasonable to assume that and so on. You mentioned shame there, and that goes to the heart of gender-based violence very often. I think you said previously that you hid for a long time because of your, well, because of what happened and your ex-husband's job. Is that right?
Yeah, well, obviously, with him being a guard, it was very hard for me to ever report. And then, you know, I think most women in that situation, and men who, the men went, you're trying to keep things stable and you're trying to keep your family together and keep things going. And but it did make it extra hard for me that my husband was kind of in a position of power in the community. But yeah, there is a lot of shame around domestic violence. And then I suppose victims blame themselves and other people blame victims. Like, you know, we hear all the time, like people saying things like, why didn't she leave? Or why did they stay? All the things, like, I wouldn't put up with that. And, like, you know, I think a lot of responsibility of families does fall on women just naturally of the way things are. So, like, women will stay at home and stuff like that with children. So, you know, the shame bit is awful. And most time people in gender-based violence situation will end up isolated as well. So,
yeah, it's really complex, isn't it? I don't know.
It's very complex.
As you say, it might be different from case to case and from person to person. I don't know, and maybe it depends on the person, if this will be, if the opportunity or the chances given to a victim of domestic abuse to name the abuser and to waive anonymity. I mean, will that be empowering, I wonder? Empowering for the person to say, look, I have this power now and I am going to make use of it.
Yeah, well, I think, like, it just, if you're able to actually speak your truth in the end, it lifts a lot of the shame and the fear, and you're able to engage with the proper professionals and move forward with your life. Where while it's shameful and hidden, you know, it's very hard to move forward. Like, if you can't actually ask for help, you know, I felt in that position for years and years and years because of the job my husband had. I couldn't ask for help. So I kept having to try and truck along. And, like, I know lots of women do end up in that, and the few men that end up in the situation end up trying to, you know, do their best and everything's hidden. So, as you said earlier on, it kind of feeds into the coercive part of gender-based violence. And, you know, the more transparent things are and the more people can rely on our family court systems to support them to move through these things, the better. Like, you just can't, it couldn't be any better.
It's complex and it's nuanced, but on balance, I think you reckon this would be a good thing.
I think so, yeah. And I think, like, it's not going to be just brought in, going back to what the texter said, willy-nilly. Like, there'll be like in everything with courts, there'll be standards of, you know, what's brought in. So I can only see it being a good thing.
Okay, look, I know people might be listening to this interview who might be going through a really difficult time, who might be suffering domestic abuse. Do you have any advice for those people listening, you who have gone through it and come out the other side, Maeve?
Yeah, I always say the same thing. Just speak to somebody, maybe a close confidant, you know, or reach out to any of the women's aid, any of the refuges, even if you don't want to go. The first time I reached out to one of the women's refuges, I just spoke over the phone the first 4 or 5 times. Then I went down for a very casual meeting. No one's going to rush you or push you, but just even to have the support that you've someone to connect in with, it's so important. So please do contact women's aid, your local refuge. You will get help and you will be listened to.
Okay. And those numbers for help, they're easy to come by. rte.ie/helplines, and you'll get all those numbers where you can get help right there. Can I thank you very much indeed for joining us, Maeve McLaughlin Doyle? It's been a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me. Bye.